And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, dude, what's that behind your ear, mate? Look at that.
I don't know. What is that?
Boom!
Oh, hey! Now, if you really want to impress me, do it with a chicken nugget. Then I'm... Oh, my God! It's a chicken nugget!
Good morning! Sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, January 23rd, 2024. I'm J.E. Skeeth here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Hey, everybody. Podcast listeners, this is for you.
And over yonder, the man making the magic happen, super producer, J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Hello, sir. Hello to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Comment away as you are. Hit the like button, subscribe. Podcast listeners, leave your boys a 5-star rating and review. Fun show lined up here. We got Tweet of the Night. Tassie does have that. We got Is This News? Some headlines to debate whether or not they're newsworthy. But we start with all of the points. You get some points and you get some points. It felt like Oprah last night in the NBA. Everybody getting points. Let's start with Sixer star Joel Embiid scoring 70 points to break Wilt Chamberlain's Sixers franchise record in a victory over Wembanyama and the Spurs. Wow. Crazy night just watching basketball with that going on and then Cat having the stats he had in the first half, and we'll get to that game, and then KD later.
Yeah.
I mean, just a wild night jumping all around trying to keep up with everything.
It was wild. And watching Joel Embiid first felt like he wanted this thing. Going up against Wembanyama, he was very aware that this new star, this rookie, was coming in, and then Wembanyama hit those two threes in the first 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. You're just stepping into them, looking great. So I think he wanted to go at him. And I think what benefited him against Wembanyama, as they matched up real quick, it wasn't like the Embiid-Jokic that people were complaining about last week. Well, I want to see Embiid versus Jokic every single possession. You got Embiid versus Wemby, but Wemby was giving him space because he didn't want to go gut to gut. He didn't want to battle him. He knows the other man is 80 pounds heavier than he is, and that's just too big. So Embiid was just stroking it. And I think Wemby would have been just a little bit more beneficial of just trying to close that space a little bit because he can block shots like that.
Use his length, yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, point is Embiid just got hot, and then he's just larger than everybody out there. When Wemby went to the bench and Zach Collins was guarding him and everybody else, he was just able to get every single shot. And I say he wanted it. He shot the ball 40 times in this game. That's his all-time high of his career.
That's a lot of shots.
Yeah, and a lot of it was because those offensive rebounds, they're just shorter than him. 9 offensive rebounds in this game. And he had to do it as he sat down in that third quarter. He was at 59. And he thought, well, am I going to have to go back in? Because the Spurs were able to keep it close. So he came back for the last 6 minutes of this game and was able to get to 70 big ones, 41 shots, 23 free throws.
18 boards, 5 assists. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's the first player in history to have the 70, 15, and 5 type line where he goes over some of those categories. He's just the ninth hooper to ever give us a 70-point game. And he's only the third true big guy, right? Over 7 feet tall. It's Wilt Chamberlain, who's got a few of these under his belt. David Robinson, and now Embiid. Just an insane night. Also, like, the perfect storm, it being in Philly, where, like you said, the Spurs kept it close enough that he maybe had to come back in, continue to score. And then you had Sixers fans booing their own players when they would take a shot. Like, there was that House Jr. 3 in the corner. Fans booing. The Sixers fans going nuts. Like, what are you doing? Get the ball to Embiid. We want someone to see something special here tonight. And he delivered. You know, the way he got his 70th point was pretty cool, too. The big man getting the steal, whatever it was called, or classified steal, block, whatever, and then going in transition coast to coast and ending the layup there to get him to 70. Breaking again. He broke Wilt Chamberlain's 57-year-old franchise record of 68 points for Philadelphia 76ers there.
Yeah.
Now it goes to him.
He got the 100. We all know the 100 on the piece of paper,
yes.
that old image of Wilt, that was for the Philadelphia Warriors.
That's right.
That's a different team. It wasn't right. the 76ers, so it is very different. But I just was astonished to see him continuously get rebound after rebound. He hasn't had a game this year where he's taken 30 shots until last night.
Yeah.
Go through the history of Joel Embiid, this is by far and the most that he's ever taken. And it was a really cool. It was Shaq, like those rare highlights when you see him able to take the ball up from the backcourt all the way up into the front court. So to him, see him do that and get to 70, and to see him with that behind the back pass, which was beautiful from that post area when guys were actually bumping him a little bit. You know, Zach Collins was trying. They were all really, really trying to stop him, but they absolutely could not. I loved watching Wemby. In all honesty, I wish he was a little bit more physical, but he just knows. What is he supposed to do against this large man? And he had some awesome ones when he was in the post. And he goes to the right hand, and he puts it off the glass and in. A right hook, push shot, whatever you want to call it, off the glass and in. He had the little lefty hand flick when Joel Embiid was guarding him, like 9 feet away. Joel Embiid is guarding him so close. So what does he do? He literally just put his arm around that big body in front of him and just flicked it up. And if you look at the stat line, you look at the box score, it was a 4-foot shot because his arm is so long. He's just able to flick it in. So it was just cool to see those two together. But Embiid just wanted it.
Well, my favorite tweet from last night, I saw Amar Burton tweet it. We're looking live at Wembanyama's answer when Q Rich and D Miles ask, who was the first person to bust your ass in the NBA on Knuckleheads? That's a thing they like to do on that pod. And, you know, down the line, when Wembanyama's on that pod or a similar pod talking to whatever retired players and he gets asked that, who is the first guy to like just light your ass up? You're like, whoa, this is a real NBA moment. It's going to be Embiid because he scored 70 on him. Joel Embiid's game score last night, okay, you're really getting into the geeky stats, but the game score, 62.5, it's the third highest ever registered in the Basketball Reference database. It's Michael Jordan's 69-point game versus the Cavs in 1990, and then it's Kobe's 81-point game versus the Raps, which, by the way, we were celebrating an anniversary of yesterday. Weird timing.
Weird coincidence timing, yeah.
There with all the scoring there last night. So, yeah, this was one of the greatest games, regular season games, that we've ever seen, statistically. And then we thought for a little bit it wasn't going to be the best game of the night.
Right.
When we get to Cat. It was. It held up. My other note, did you see Greg Popovich's coming into this game, getting asked about how they were going to stop Embiid or what they were going to do. This is like 90 minutes before tip. Pop says, about their chances in stopping Embiid. Quote, I don't think it matters what we do, he said. I can give you some bullshit if you want. End quote. So I guess Pop saw what was going to be happening here. I'm sure he didn't even think it was going to get to 70, but there's not really anything you can do. But that's what makes Embiid special, right? The size of the guy and how much pressure he can put on you just going to the free throw line, because what are you supposed to do? It's very reminiscent to, obviously, the young athletic Shaq, where it's like, what are you supposed to do? The difference is Embiid can hit free throws, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Or that's where one thing that Shaq struggled with. And then the other part, though, he's a monster, 7 feet tall, 280 pounds, but he's light on his feet. He's Akeem-like that way, where he's like a ballet out there. So you can see those coast-to-coast moves and obviously the comfortability he has right now with the jumper. Just what a game.
That has grown in his game over the years. It's better than Shaq, to be honest, in terms of shooting from the mid-range. His jumper is beautiful. So that's what's different. If Greg Popovich wanted Wemby to stop him, he would say, get into his space and try and make him go by you, and then you can block his butt because you are 5 inches taller than that guy. That being said, Embiid would just go through him. He's literally 80 pounds more.
Yeah.
So he didn't want to wear down every single possession, so he gave him that space.
Right. And also, you're going to be fouled out within like 5 minutes.
Probably, yeah. Right? Yeah, or take a charge or whatever, but it would have worn on him, and that's what Wembanyama has to do from year to year. I mean, as soon as they don't make the playoffs in April, he's got to go to France and lift some very large weights to get stronger, to try and be able to hold off Embiid. But Embiid likes this because this preserves him for the rest of the season, where you don't have to just pop, pop, pop against the center. And that's why him and Jokic weren't going at it as much last week when we saw them to go at it. So he steps into the mid-range, and he was just absolutely stroking. I was wondering, watching this game, was it on Amazon Prime? Because I saw it was on NBA TV, and then in that scorebook, where you look at the score on the bottom, there was an additional Amazon Prime little logo.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, so it was very interesting. I was watching the NBA TV version, so maybe that one was the only one that had it. But we've been talking recently about Amazon Prime making the purchase through this the Diamond Valley interest there, the bankruptcy there. So I just wonder if the games are, you know, that is, I'm interested just where it's going here, because games in baseball and basketball seem to be going to Amazon Prime. And we just saw that the WWE is going to be on Netflix for 10 years.
Starting in 2025.
Yeah, for 10 years, they paid $5 billion. Amazon, or excuse me, Netflix in this scenario paid $5 billion to have WWE on their channel.
Is the NBA next?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
My takeaway from the score bug was there's, you know, they have the 76ers logo, obviously 7-6. The 6 is white, and then the score. So it looked like when Embiid was on his run, you know, his run there where he's like 59, 60, keeps going up, up, up. It looked like the score for the Sixers at one point was like 6,129 points because the 6 looked, in the logo, looked pretty similar to the actual score for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, it is always interesting.
Score bug takeaway.
When they have that 7-6, and just one other thing that they mentioned during the broadcast was that this was the first player since Michael Jordan in 1990, to have 65 and 17 rebounds at least, because MJ had 69 in his career high game and 18 rebounds. So as he was ticking up, this is the first time a guy has been able to combine those points and rebounds. So he got 70 and 18. That was just nice to have an MJ, since we're mentioning freaking everybody, because, yeah, I mean, you want to mention the guys who scored 70. We didn't mention, like, a Devin Booker or a Donovan Mitchell, like, lately, Damian Lillard. Yeah.
Well, think about that. So, you know, we just celebrated our 18th anniversary of this show when we started it way back in the day. One of our third podcast ever, I think it was our second, was Kobe scoring 81 against our Toronto Raptors and us reacting to that. That was the second show I believe we ever did way back in Toronto as the Basketball Jones. And, you know, that stands for a long time, right? Yes, then we get the Booker game. But in basically the last calendar year, we've now had three guys go for 70 plus. You said it. Donovan Mitchell, Dame, they did it within like, I don't know, a couple weeks of each other. And then now we got Embiid and we're not done. No. We're going to have another one of these. I don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be somebody doing another. They're flirting with 70, if not more. It's just the way these guys are just so talented, obviously, in scoring the ball, the pressure they can get on, getting to the line. Some of these guys are automatic there, so it's just like there's 20 points. I think we'll see another one.
Yeah. I was surprised. We'll get to Kat in a second, that he didn't get to 70 the way he was cooking at halftime. He had 44 at halftime. It was surprised that he only had 18 in the second half. We'll get to that in a sec. But just last thing you mentioned, Kobe. Somehow, some way, someone asked the legend to say your name. Kobe Bryant, to say your name. Remember, we had that video for a long time where he said, "Hey, J.E., it's Kobe." Or what did he say exactly? That was something about you. That J.D. loved to use in the sizzle reel.
Yeah,
KB.
It's KB. Yeah, that's what he said.
KB.
Where the hell did we get that, though?
He got it from Yard Barker.
Thanks, Yard Barker.
Who was it?
Well, you're the one
there that
talked to the late, great Kobe Bryant.
I was.
And actually
very lucky.
Talked to him about scoring 81 against our Raps, and he, you know, sarcastically apologized, which was great. Anyway, we have a trade, by the way. Breaking news. Yeah. Our guy Jerome here in Slack saying Kyle Lowry has been traded to the Hornets for Terry Rozier. So,
is that real?
I guess so. Wow. So we will get
to that. Well, that was going to be a rumor for later in our show.
I was going to say, so why don't we just sit on that for a second? Let's get to the rest of the performances from last night, and then we will just fold that in to, like you said, one of the headlines and news was going to be about that rumor. So apparently it's official. Jerome, fact check that. Double fact check that. Triple fact check that. But he's made the board, so it must be real.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Karl-Anthony Towns, though.
I'm getting in the car, going to Charlotte. It's 4 hours away.
Cheer on the
watch,
growth.
Kyle.
Okay, we've given Embiid his flowers. What a game. So, also, last night, Karl-Anthony Towns scored 62, but it comes in a loss.
But yeah.
Because the Hornets rallied and spoil this game from Kat, and it was a weird game. Mm-hmm. It's a game in which Kat gets benched down the sort of stretch.
A little bit.
And was probably a little too shot happy and maybe gunning for whether it be 70 or 80 or whatever, 100. They got a little tunnel vision there, and the game got out of control, got back into the game the Hornets did, and they went on to win. So yeah, What do you think of this sort of like ruined in a way 62-point night, which is a Wolves franchise record, which Cat previously had. I think he had it at 60, but he eclipsed that. So thoughts on this one?
Yeah, he had that flat 60, and he clearly wanted to beat it. He definitely was going for those shots towards the end, and his head coach, Chris Finch, said it post-game.
He was pissed.
He was pissed about a lot of things. There's no doubt. I think they really, really, really missed Mike Conley, their point guard, just to get the offense going. Not necessarily take over, but just get the ball moving, because that's what happened in the fourth quarter. It wasn't necessarily all Cat's fault, but part of it was. And part of it was just the fact that everybody was just going one-on-one and just, all right, I'm good with this. I'll just take these shots that the Hornets were able to beat because they were moving the ball a little bit more. It's just a huge number for Charlotte. In the fourth quarter, it's where they beat them, was 36-18. That is what where the game changed. Mm-hmm. They were up. Carl said, all right, I'll just keep shooting. And Anthony Edwards was doing the same. And for them, as the Minnesota Timberwolves, to be the best defense in the league to allow 128 against this Hornets team is just way too many.
Yeah. There was some great shot-making, I thought, from the Hornets in the fourth.
Ooh, baby, yeah.
Like, I mean, you had Rozier, who's now on the Heat, I guess, attacking Gobert. He had a nice finish inside. Brandon Miller had a very difficult jumper with guys draped all over him.
Yeah.
Like, they were just good shot-making, but absolutely. You are right. There is no doubt they were up big. Towns was rolling, you know, couldn't miss from three. You had the Hornets broadcast, Eric Collins going nuts, mm-hmm. screaming no, like it was a horror movie there in the first half. But then they just were like, let's see how many we can get them. Especially in the fourth there. At the start, he was just like jacking away, and he went cold. He only had 4 points. Towns did 2 of 10 shooting in the fourth quarter. He thought he was fouled on that last drive.
He was.
Where there was a lot of guys around him, a lot of contact. A little surprising for a guy that had 62 points at that point to maybe not get that call.
Yeah.
You know, there was a bit of the clean part of the block there, I think, from Black, but there was a lot of other contact. And then Cat had a chance at the end. He had to like throw up a desperation heave three-pointer, which didn't come close. So that's how he got to 2 for 10 shooting in the fourth. But yeah, you're right about Chris Finch saying he was like, he called it an absolute disgusting performance of defense and immature basketball.
Mm.
And even, I believe, Anthony Edwards admitted, because this guy keeps it real, he's like, yeah, we were just like seeing how many points we could get Cat. And like we didn't really sort of respect the game. I'm paraphrasing a little bit there, but like that was what we were getting. We got just like a one-track mind there, like, oh, how many points can we get this guy? This guy's on fire. And the Hornets stuck around, and obviously put it together in the fourth. Like, what a weird, like, I saw somebody say this was like the most Karl Anthony Towns game of all time. There's some truth to that. I almost felt bad for him in a weird way because he played so well and then he obviously struggled in the fourth, and they lose the game, so nobody cares.
He was scorching hot. And he had 44 in the first half and just 18 in the second half, which is strange. I thought after watching Embiid, we're getting 70. No problem here. Yeah. 70 number two. But the Hornets were just outplaying the Wolves in that fourth quarter. Again, they definitely missed Conley out there, who looked cool in that vest, that square vest. But they just they stopped being who they are. And Cat is so good because he creates space for Rudy Gobert, because as a 4-5 and these 2 7-footers that are part of the best defense in the NBA, Carl can sit outside the three-point line, and he has to be guarded because he's an incredible shooter.
Sure, hit his first 8 threes, hit 10 on the night.
Yeah. He helps create space for Rudy Gobert. But on the other end, they just weren't the same defensively.
No.
Jaden McDaniels, who I love talking about, and I love how he plays defense. He is their best perimeter defender, but he's been slacking a little bit. And he even on the bench, he just didn't seem into it. And out there defensively, he wasn't necessarily just into it. I think teams get into a bit of a lull here in the 82-game schedule. Mm-hmm. We have Christmas. Our team is going how it's going to go for most of the season. It's going well. We're kind of waiting for All-Star game. 82 games is a lot. Maybe we should go down to 70. But anyways, just beyond that, you mentioned the Hornets and how good they were. Brandon Miller, the number two pick.
That was one of his best games.
Yeah, I think it might have been his best game. Yeah. Scored 27. You just missed 2 shots in this game. He was just so hot. And you mentioned that one shot that was so difficult.
Oh.
It was so hard to see him evolve. Maybe they made the right pick, because everybody said, oh, you got to take Scoot at number two. Mm-hmm. But he has been coming on. He had 23 and 24 in his last two coming into this game at 27 points. He's averaging just 15 overall, but he's growing. I think he is growing, and had a little injury to take him away from part of this game. But because we're all talking Cat and friends, we got to mention him, and obviously Terry Rozier, I guess, too.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But that guy can score, too. They were able to score in that fourth.
Yep. Townsend and Bede became the fourth pair of NBA players to each score at least 60 points on the same day, and the first time since David Robinson, who had 73, and George Gervin, who had 63, in 1978. When they were chasing the scoring title. So big night for points. Embiid, Sixers fans happy, comes in a win, he gets 70. Wolves fans, not as ecstatic. You know, 62 is still nice, but in the loss, in a rough loss to a team in the Hornets, who obviously are one of the worst teams in the league, and they really just shit the bed in the fourth. And again, like, the guy that's got it going is pulled a couple times in the fourth. I get some of it was for defensive
Absolutely.
Reasons. Yep. I get that, but wow, that's a tough pill to swallow there. And this, you know, he didn't get enough from his other guys either. And had a bad game. They were missing bunnies inside. Cat missed a layup inside. McDaniels missed a layup inside. Gobert could have grabbed that rebound, didn't. You know, there was like those small little things added up.
Yeah, and apparently Anthony Edwards was sick coming into this game, so he was questionable. He obviously didn't look good. Good teammate, trying to get it going for Cat, but they just stood out there thinking, oh, we got this huge double-digit lead against Charlotte Hornets. Let's just chuck. And yes, Karl-Anthony Towns was definitely followed by a reaching Terry Rozier on that play before he got blocked. There's no doubt. But it was kind of hard to see for the referees. I don't know why I want to make excuses for the referees, but he was plowing into two other guys that weren't Terry Rozier, and Terry Rozier kind of reached, so they were kind of looking at the other two guys. That being said, yeah, it stinks. It should have been called.
Final game we'll touch on here, because I guess we got to get to a trade. Kevin Durant scored 43 points. Come on. What is that? Might as well be two. He hits a game-winning shot, though, the most important two, as the Suns rallied from 23 down to beat the Bulls 115-113. Highly recommend you go check the final 5 or 6 minutes of this game. The shot-making, some controversial, I would say, calls that were either overturned or maybe missed.
Absolutely.
Especially from the Bulls side of things. But KD, the shot at the end there, just incredible. Like sort of a double clutch shot. I mean, Caruso's all over him, so he sort of just hangs up in the air a little bit, throws a little pump fake in the air, and then still splashes it. Nice pass from Nurk, too, there. Because that was after the Bulls had a foul to give, so KD just stood there at the top. Caruso just stood there. Clock winded down from like 22 seconds. KD's finally started to make a move. Caruso fouled him because they had a foul to give. Then they had to inbound it on the side. I was concerned they weren't even going to get the ball to KD at first. But Nurk found him, and he hit a hell of a jumper there to seal the deal.
I'm glad we're just talking about this last shot, because it was really incredible.
It was an awesome shot.
It was so beautiful to see Nurk inbound at the three-point line, beyond the three-point line where Durant was standing. And Caruso may have been looking a little bit more at Nurkic, a little too much, so he was slow to recover to Kevin Durant, but he got there fast enough to just put his hand up and try and fly by and block the shot, and Durant realized it, so he brought the ball down as Caruso went over it and then was able to shoot. So he was hanging in the air while he brought it down and was able to shoot it. It's beautiful. This is an anniversary of ours for 18 years we've been doing this show. It's hard to remember shots like that. I literally can't. I can't remember.
Will you remember it next week? Is the question?
No, really. Is there a huge accumulation of double clutch shots like that? I don't think so.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
And especially the camera angle. Maybe it's because the camera angles aren't all that good years over years since we've been doing this show. But there was a great camera angle from the other end of the floor where it just zoomed in to see Caruso almost fly by and block it.
Yeah.
But Durant said, nah, I'm so freaking talented. I can drop the ball an inch, so you just fly by and then hit the shot. Money, as he was. You mentioned all the shots that were being made.
Oh.
That was KD stuff right there.
Yeah, because he hit a big three. That was off after a rebound there. I think Beal had missed a shot. He sort of stayed with it, though. I think Eubanks got credit for the rebound. That one got kicked out.
Eubanks,
feeling
it. And
KD hit a big three. But there was a crazy overturned call on DeRozan. Yeah, classic DeRozan baseline sort of fadeaway jumper. I believe originally called a foul on the Suns. They challenged, saying, nah, DeRozan's kicking his legs out. And DeRozan had hit the shot, too. And they looked at it. They said, yeah, you know what? You're right. Offensive foul. That was a big, big play. That was like with a couple minutes left. And then there was a couple other ones where I thought there was maybe some contact. But, the Suns pull it off to rally from 23 back. I mean, it's a hell of a comeback.
Yeah, looked like a Bulls night for sure.
Absolutely. I'm shocked. And DeRozan was then hitting his shots. That's why I recommend you go check the highlights, because it was some great shot making. Like, DeRozan was doing his thing. But, a little too much KD with a season high 43 for KD.
Yeah, on a day when he said that he should be in the greatest of all time conversation, he has to throw it out there, and he's always labeled as the best scorer, which just kind of reduces what he did in the NBA because you just mentioned him as a scorer. Hey, Harden's a great scorer. Oh, yeah, what about the other stuff? Well, Durant did win a couple championships, but obviously the Golden State thing kills him.
But we're talking greatest of all time. Yeah, you're getting to a list of three, four, or five guys.
I know.
Do you believe KD's that high? No, yeah. I think he's second tier, right?
That's where
he's at least right now. I mean, he's still playing.
Yeah.
Get another one. Maybe it's different. And then just quickly, other scores. The Cavs crushed the Magic for their eighth straight win. This is one of the most surprising stories, I would think, in the NBA with no Garland and Mobley. They continue to win. Giannis had a triple-double. Bucks pulled away late against the Pistons. Tatum and Brown helped the Celtics overcome Luka's triple-double in a win. Jaren Jackson Jr. had 27 points in a win against the Raptors. And Harrison Barnes scored 32 as the Kings beat the Hawks. They snapped their four-game skid. Any of those games you want to touch on?
Well, that Cavs-Magic game, it's miraculous what these Cavs have become. They destroyed the Magic, primarily with their three-point shooting, and that's what they've done since. They had two huge guys in terms of their stardom. They've been out for so long in Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, so this team became something different as they were trying at the beginning while everyone was healthy, but then they became this three-point shooting team, and it's really goes through Donovan Mitchell, and because of the three-point shooters that they've put on the floor since Mobley and Garland have been hurt, you can't double Mitchell. And like watching Chuma Okeke guard him, who is an Okeke defender, but he can't guard Mitchell one-on-one. It just can't happen. So Donovan Mitchell started just finding guys, and Sam Merrill, who is now a big part of this rotation coming off the bench, was 8 of 13 from three-point land. Strus, multiple threes. Dean Wade, multiple threes, who's starting for Evan Mobley now. It just makes me ask, does Evan Mobley start when he comes back? I know he's Evan Mobley, and he's a very good player. But the space that Dean Wade creates is different. It's just different out there. Evan Mobley doesn't shoot the threes. He came in for 2 years. He took a couple threes a game that's now been reduced. It was 1.3 threes per game. He at least fired them away. And now he kind of takes a three every two games. It's reduced. Mm-hmm. So this something that we all expected for Evan Mobley to expand his game to hasn't happened. And I don't know. I don't know if Evan Mobley, this guy who's in the rookie of the year talks, I don't know if he starts, because JB Bickerstaff, head coach, said, "We obviously understand you want to get as many layups as you possibly can, but with our personnel that's there now, we can stretch the floor. We've got quick triggers and no conscience." So we want to take advantage of that. They took 43 threes against the Hawks, and then guys just firing away yesterday against a very good Magic defensive team, hitting 20 threes. And then you make Mitchell look so much better just because of all that space.
Exactly.
And Jared Allen is their starting center, and he can hit shots too. Not three-point shots, but I don't think you want two guys.
We don't need two of those guys.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see.
Fascinating stuff. They continue to rack up the wins. Good stuff there from the Cavs. Okay, we got to take a break, and then we got to figure out our B block and how we're going to do this, because we do have a trade to discuss that broke during the show, and we have a bunch of other headlines, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, still here in the Classic Factory. If you're joining us live on YouTube or even watching later, hit the like button. Make sure you subscribe. And podcast listeners, help us out. 5-star ratings and reviews. So, how do we want to tackle this, boys?
Well, we'll do is this news sting, then go right to the trade. That's the biggest news.
Okay.
Now, what do you want to do?
Well, are you on Slack right now? Probably not. You were just doing an ad read.
I was just doing an ad read.
I say we just start by talking about this trade.
Okay,
yeah, just
let's
broke,
do it.
Then we'll get
and
to
then
the
we'll
news.
Pivot to is this news, and we'll just get rid of the Lowry headline that we had in is
okay,
this news.
Okay, fair enough.
There we go. That's how the sausage gets made. The Charlotte Hornets. This is a mini Woj bomb. While we were live, oh, we love it. That's why we do it live, baby. The Hornets are trading guard Terry Rozier to the Miami Heat for a 2027 first-round pick and Kyle Lowry. That first-round pick in the deal does include protections, okay? I'm sure we'll be finding out about those protections, but here we have Rozier, who's having an awesome year. I mean, we just talked about how great he played there in the fourth in a win over the Wolves last night. He's averaging 23.2 points per game. 6.5 assists, basically 4 boards, and he is making his way to the Miami Heat TAS, and all it took was Lowry, who was coming off the bench. Wasn't all that happy about that.
No.
And that first-round pick, so that's had to be attached to Lowry there. We also have word from Woj that the Hornets have no immediate plans to work on a buyout with Lowry and are expected to see if they can work another trade for him before the deadline. So Lowry might be on the move, maybe to a more of a contending team where he can come off the bench and help a team. But anyway, Terry Rozier going to Miami. What do you think here?
First, shocked, but also pleased that rumors come true. This was a rumor that we were going to talk about today. Is the Charlotte Hornets definitely a seller when it comes to this trade deadline, just a mere 2 weeks away. And the Miami Heat have been looking all season long for a potential scoring guard, even in the preseason. There was the Damian Lillard talk, obviously, and they've now added Terry Rozier, who is a really good scorer that we talk about here on the show because the guy is definitely not talked about a lot. When you go and talk about the Charlotte Hornets, LaMelo Ball is talked about first and foremost, and Rozier doesn't get a lot of the credit, but he is extremely good. I definitely wondered when Kyle Lowry went to the bench for 2 games and he said he wanted to get back into the starting lineup. What the Heat were doing exactly, because I can understand making Tyler Hero a starter every single game this season and having Kyle Lowry beside him, even though this is a really good defensive team. It's smaller. It's a smaller backcourt, and Lowry gives it on the defensive end, but you may want to get a little bit larger. But they just go with Terry Rozier, who when I went to the trade machine today, mm-hmm. I was thinking that Terry Rozier would get there, but he is also extremely small. They're extremely happy to have Jaime Jaquez with Butler and Adebayo to add that size there, and him being sort of relentless as a rookie. So those 3 guys are definitely going to play. Those will be the defensive guys there. But I guess you'll see some other lineups. I wonder if the Heat are done is basically what I'm saying. Because Rozier probably will come off the bench and be your 6th man lighting it up on this team if Tyler Hero is starting, which I understand. Because you want to change it up a little bit. But Kyle getting a first-round pick.
We have, by the way, the protections on that. And it's not horrible. Woj is saying that in the Rozier deal, Miami's first-round pick is lottery-protected in 2027 and then unprotected should it convey in 2028. So there is that. So it's a future pick.
There's that. Terry's going to help. This was what it comes down to. The guy can score, and the guy can score on his own. And so that's why I probably think he's going to be their 6th man. I think he's going to light it up from the bench.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before. You know, he's sort of been lost in Charlotte where they haven't had a lot of success recently. But he has played in playoff series before, you know, back in his Celtics days. He's been there, has a lot of playoff experience. So, you know, shouldn't be shocked when the Heat are in a playoff series and should be okay there. Also, Lowry, again, we were coming into this show with the headline about this rumor. I had in my notes here, I'm pretty sure Miami's going to have to attach a first-round pick with Lowry to go and get someone like Rozier, and that's ended up what they had to do. But Lowry, 38 years old in March, he is in arguably the worst stretch of his Heat career, at least, Tass, when it comes to shooting. I mean, this guy, Lowry, one of my favorite players of all time, the GROAT, the greatest Raptor of all time, he was shooting 16.7% over his last 5 games. He hadn't hit a 3-pointer in his last 5 games. He was averaging 2 points per game. Mm-hmm. I know it's a small sample size, but we're talking some minutes, too. These are not 5, 6 minutes a game. He was playing 25 minutes a game, so he had just been brutal for them. Not surprisingly, they had lost their last three. They lost to the Raps, they lost to the Hawks, they lost to the Magic. And yeah, he was coming off the bench for a couple of those and didn't seem all that excited about that. Then we saw, was it last night? Oh, Kyle Lowry on social media. He stopped following all the Heat players. Uh-oh, he removed the Heat thing from his bio. So the writing was on the wall, and he goes to Charlotte for now. I don't think he's going to be there long. And I really like this move from the Heat, getting Terry Rozier. Some more scoring punch.
They need a better offense. They rank like 20th in the NBA in offense, and that's why they were so focused on getting someone rumored to be Damian Lillard before the season started, because even though they made the NBA Finals, Jimmy needs some help offensively, and so I think Rozier makes a lot of sense. I do wonder who that starting shooting guard is going to be, if it will be just Jaime Jaquez and Jimmy Butler and Bam in the front court, and then Tyler Hero alongside. Could it be Josh Richardson? You know, you're like your 2011 Mavs that won it all. They started Deshaun Stevenson at the shooting guard spot, somebody who can play D, but not necessarily play more than 20 minutes.
Right.
And then you can change it up and get Jason Terry in that case, or Terry Rozier in this case, to come off the bench to light it up, because they're going to be a good defensive team. I always wondered about their size, but I guess Jaquez is going to be their starting power forward, but he's a little undersized. I don't know. I'm thinking long term. I'm thinking what this team becomes here with Terry Rozier, but maybe they're not done. Or it's Haywood Highsmith. They've got guys, and obviously Spoelstra sat Lowry. Yeah, because he wasn't playing all that incredibly well.
No.
Offensively.
Again, he's 38 soon. I mean, that's old. I mean, and for a guy that plays the way he does as well, maybe it's caught up to him a little bit. Does he have a little bit left in the tank to help a contending team? I think so, but it would have to be sort of in a, you know, obviously as a vet guy on a bench in the locker room, and then maybe changing the outcome of a quarter over a half in a playoff series. But we'll see where he lands and if he gets moved. But yeah, like the Heat, like this to me, like they're like, no, this is still open in the East. We still believe in any matchup we can beat a team in a 7-game series. We've done it before. Why not now? And they're adding more talent here, which is sort of cool to see, you know. And it's costing them a future pick, which could be a decent pick, you know. But they don't care for that right now. It's right all about this second.
It's always all about that with the Miami Heat. They always want to go for it. But also, Jimmy Butler has played hard for his NBA career. He is 34 years of age. He is getting a little bit older, and I can understand why they're sort of going for it here, right now. Yeah, they're trading Kyle Lowry. Somebody will put him in the Hall of Fame one day, but it is unfortunate. But this is when the Raptors traded him. It was 3 years ago now, you know, almost 3 years ago. This is the end of his contract that Miami was willing to give him. Three years, $90 million back then. This is the 30 that he's making this season. But I do think, Charlotte will try and send him somewhere, or make a little buyout deal with
if
Kyle
they can't
Lowry.
Get anything in return. I would think so. Yeah,
but yeah, there's somebody's going to want him as a backup guard. I mean, we can think of lots of teams. There's all this talk about the Knicks wanting to bring in a complimentary shooting type of guard off the bench, you know, a Jordan Clarkson or something like that. But sometimes with that team, they've got Jalen Brunson. They could use a Kyle Lowry. Is all I'm thinking right now.
All right, very exciting stuff. Trade happening during the pod. We love to see it. Okay, let's get to a little Is This News. Tassie, you got the headlines today.
Yeah.
I guess we're ditching the Lowry one. We don't need to touch
on
that
we'll
one
ditch
anymore.
That one. Yeah, this is the segment where we tell you everything you need to know in basketball. Or is it? Who knows? This is This News. We start with the Chicago Bulls. Zach LaVine rolled his ankle against the Raptors or 5 days ago. Went off the floor, threw a towel. He was very angry because this was an injury coming off a more another injury. So he is a little upset. It's only a couple weeks until the trade deadline.
Yeah.
He's been rumored to be in trades. So the article from The Athletic here, Zach LaVine's injury clouds Bulls trade prospects as deadline nears. Is this news, Skeets?
I guess it is, yes, because it makes already what was going to be a tricky trade situation even trickier, right? And what I mean by that is we have to consider before the injury what team is comfortable absorbing Zach LaVine's contract. 3 years, approximately $138 million left on that deal, including a $49 million player option in 26-27, which he'll probably pick up. So there's that. Then you had to figure out, well, which team is comfortable even just fitting Zach LaVine into their lineup, and is he their second guy, their third guy, and all of that, how he fits on court. And now a team, in theory, must be comfortable, for the lack of a better term, taking on damaged goods right now, if this deal is to happen sort of here before the deadline. You know, he's got the sprained right ankle. It's going to keep him out a couple weeks. He's also missed a bunch of time this year. And then on top of all that, Tess,
yeah,
you know, to put a tack under your ass and make you even more uncomfortable, it's no secret that the Bulls have performed better without Zach LaVine this year. So there's that part of the equation too. Now, I know he came back here. He definitely was like trying to be more of a team player.
Absolutely.
Maybe trying to help the trade value. I don't know what was going on there. But the Bulls 11-8 without Zach LaVine in the lineup. It could be 11-9 now. I forgot to maybe add the loss to the Suns last night. But 10-15 with Zach LaVine. So there's this whole part. So I guess this is newsworthy just because it's like ill-timed and doesn't help any sort of hypothetical return package the Bulls may or may not receive from any of these teams, because now the guy's got a bum ankle.
Yeah.
And you know, you should be able to come back from a sprained ankle. Don't get me wrong. But it's not. It doesn't help.
Mm.
It doesn't help the idea of like, ooh, an enticing offer getting more enticing because teams are like, you know, really trying to get Zach LaVine. By all accounts, there's very little interest in what really is the contract, not the player.
No.
Right?
Because Zach LaVine did good enough when he came back from that first injury. He played hard enough. He told Kobe White, who is now the starting shooting guard, or the starting point guard, but also everything sort of running through him. He told him, I'm here to make you better. I'm here to not get in your way. Mm. And that's something that they shared. And to me, that's a great sign. I think he's also showcasing himself in general because he knows how good he can be. He is an incredible scorer, and he knows that there are other teams watching, specifically the Los Angeles Lakers, as we always have to talk about. Yeah. But I think being smart and showing the Los Angeles Lakers that he can play off the ball, that he doesn't necessarily have to have everything go through him the entire time, was fitting. I think it fit well with him coming off the bench primarily, mm-hmm. When he came back, and even trying to fight through that ankle injury. So I think
this still means he'll be traded in the next, what, 2.5 weeks that we're at?
Yeah, I don't think this really changes how much other teams want him.
No.
Does it change if he gets traded or not? Will he get traded? I don't know. I'm not picking up the calls in the front office there with Eversley. And I'm just
AK.
Not. Yeah, and AK. I'm not picking it up, so I don't know. But I do think they're listening. I know they're somewhat, I wouldn't say entirely pulling the plug, but they're somewhat pulling the plug. They signed Vooch to a contract before this season. He's there. Is he tradable? DeMar is a free agent this offseason.
Is he tradable?
There's lots. So
Caruso is one player that a lot of people probably want, yeah. But should they trade him?
Yeah.
Do you trade him at, you know, this at a high level that he's playing at right now, and maybe you're cashing in there? Like, is Caruso going to be a part of your long-term plan? And if he's not, then maybe you do cash in. But yeah, a lot of decisions.
Right, they do. And so Karnišević is taking the calls.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. About all these guys. He is discussing all these guys. But as you mentioned about those dollar bills that are owed to LaVine, those are a lot.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of money. They signed him to a huge deal when things were going really well, when Lonzo Ball was balling for them and things were looking great. And then, bang, it's all over. It all changed for them with Lonzo Ball out. So TBD on if anybody gets dealt. All right, next one. Kyle Lowry. Oh, no, we're not doing Kyle Lowry anymore. We're talking uniforms with this next one.
Okay.
One specific part of them we've all noticed as basketball geeks. Each team has more jerseys. And where they are, they've changed. The jerseys have changed. They've added so many. Another one from The Athletic.
Okay.
TheAthletic.com/NoDunks for a good deal right now if you want an Athletic subscription. Yeah. The Athletic lists this article. Why NBA home teams have stopped wearing white jerseys. Baby, this was news to me. Is this news to you?
This was news to you?
Yeah, I geeked out.
I enjoyed it. Mike Vorkunov, I think he does a great job sort of like covering the, I guess, business side of things, if you want to call it that, in the sports world. I learned some things in this article that we can go through, but I wouldn't say this is newsworthy. Teams haven't been wearing their white home jerseys for like a long time now.
Yeah.
And the reason is dollar bills.
Right.
And that's what Mike says in the article. Teams want to make sure these new city edition jerseys, these zany designs, the ones that the kids want, whatever, that they get enough appearances in their own home markets So the fans see them and go, oh, that's a cool jersey. Dad, I want that wild jersey. Okay, let's go to the store and grab it, right? You know, you do this around the holidays too, and people are shopping for gifts and stuff like that. So you just create these favorable environments to show them off, build an affinity for them, and maybe people are going to buy them. So that's not, that part's not newsworthy because we've been doing this for a while now.
Uh-huh.
Like, nobody wears basically white at home. I mean, the Suns were wearing their white jerseys at home last night.
That's surprising.
I actually like it. I do like it. I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I don't mind it.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why they don't, because all these new jerseys they make, they want to sell. So you got to show them off to your fan base. Is the thinking, I think.
Yeah, I just liked it how they went into detail. Nike took over in 2017-2018. So this is their seventh full year having everything go through them. And they assigned specific names to home jerseys and road jerseys and alternate jerseys and all that. And I know we know these names, but
you're talking it's about good to the write association
down. Yeah.
And the icon.
Yeah, because like you just said, the kids don't know that what the home jersey is anymore because it's changed.
No, how would you be able to keep track?
Exactly.
It's like six jerseys.
Exactly. So if they know anything, they say, oh, that's the blue jersey they have. Or that's the red, the colors. They probably don't go by the names.
No, they definitely don't.
The home one is the association. That's their white jersey of every team. The road one is the icon. The statement is their alternate jersey. And the city edition, which changes annually and has no real set color scheme, is their fourth jerseys. And I liked seeing this from
Isn't there like sometimes a classic jersey too? Or is that the same as a city?
Yeah, there is. Because
you know, you get these like throwback ones, really, that are like almost outside. Anyway,
so there is. You're right. No, and there's just a number allocation. You got to wear it this many times. You got to wear it.
Yeah.
So the home.
I learned that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's good. The home and road, you have to wear at least 10 times.
Yep.
The association, the icon. But I'm calling them the home and road. We got to figure out better terms. Nike's got to do a better job of that. Or maybe it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Jersey 1 is this one. Like, I don't know. I can't specify each one. Anyways, you have to wear the home and road 10 times. The statement 6 times.
Yeah.
The city edition and classic 3 times.
Right. So minimum. Classics, minimum.
A minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah, minimum. So that's 26, 32 of your 82 games. So you can really change it up for your other 50 games. You can wear whatever the heck you want.
Here's the paragraph that jumped out to me in Mike Vorkanoff's article. Aesthetically, the NBA looks different from year to year as it introduces new uniforms with each season. It is exhilarating or exhausting, depending on whom you ask. The league is either running into grand ideas behind the creativity of its teams, or it is running away from convention and diluting its storied brands. That is perfectly put.
Mm.
Which side do you fall on?
Yeah.
Too many jerseys, you're actually ruining some of these iconic brands
by
diluting it all, or the opposite. Some of these are great jerseys, some fun designs. Obviously, again, you're trying to hit a younger fan base, you're trying to sell jerseys, I get all that, and people love it. So, I mean, are you somewhere in the middle, you know, one end of the spectrum?
Yeah, I guess when they gave Nike this ability to just designate how many games are worn by each type of jersey, I guess they were sort of allowing the franchise to say, okay, we want to have our home jerseys be primarily white. If they want, they can't. So
they
like a Boston Celtics, I tend to think, well, they're wearing the traditional stuff. Predominantly the traditional stuff. They have to have a statement in these city edition alternate jerseys. But those only have to be worn a few times. So they're trying to have a balance, I think. Mm-hmm. They allow the franchises to have a balance and just get on their own court and wear what you want. Because, yeah, you could be wearing your home team as much as you, or home jersey as much as you want, and not mix it up as much. Just to give everybody a little bit of taste. But if you don't want that, then you maybe you don't sell as many. So I guess they're just allowing. It's complicated. This article is complicated.
Well, it gets down to this. Should one team, let's just whatever, should the Celtics be allowed to say, we only want two jerseys, man. We want a green jersey and we want a white jersey. That's it.
I guess not.
Because that's our brand. I know. And then another team can be like, no, we want New Jersey every night, man.
We want 8.
We want 82.
Oh, okay.
or 8. Uh-huh. We want as many as we can think of. Like, I mean,
right.
I guess, like, that's the thing. Should the NBA, which they do have a say, because it is the entire brand, right? You want to sort of keep, the checks and balances on everything. Otherwise, one team goes well overboard, and maybe another team is too stodgy and doesn't lean into some creativity. I get why they want to, like, you know, sort of keep everyone on the same sort of numbers here.
Yeah.
Okay, we have these four jerseys. Maybe you have a fifth.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you really need that? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, not necessarily. And I understand you want to keep the old farts happy. There are some old fans who just want to see a white jersey and a dark jersey. And then that's why they allow them to wear them for as much as they want while making rules that they have to have these fourth jerseys. So they kind of allow them to say, this jersey gets X amount of games. This jersey gets X amount
this
of games.
This is not just an NBA thing, right? The NHL used to, I believe, have the, maybe it was an unwritten rule or written rule, you know, the home team. They wear their whites, right?
Yeah.
That's like, just like the NBA days. But they don't do that anymore. They've veered away from that. Again, I think it's just all to sell merch. Mm-hmm. That's the reason. But you can be upset with it, I guess. I mean, there was one thing that I did like. You would turn on a game and you knew instantaneously that's the home team.
Yeah, that's the
now thing. You don't. You're like, oh, hold on, the road team's wearing white. Okay, but so what? You look at the scorebook.
Mm-hmm.
Takes you one more second to figure out who's the home team.
Yeah. No, I find the jerseys for the NHL sometimes a little confusing to understand what they are. I was just in Canada, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up some of my old jerseys that I had left there because I don't wear hockey jerseys anymore. Mm-hmm. But I got some, so I'm going to wear them tomorrow.
What?
Both of them. XLs. They're huge.
Oh, yeah.
For me, they're a little too big.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to wear shoulder pads. I think that's why they sell those jerseys, because you got to fill them in.
Hey, speaking of hockey, did you see the Oilers won their 13th straight game?
Did they?
And set the Canadian record for most wins in a row?
Wow.
Isn't that weird? I'm like, how is that the record?
Yeah, you think somebody was better.
But I guess
in hockey, it's a lot.
You tie more often, maybe?
You tie.
Yeah.
The tie takes
away.
They
won 13 straight, the Oilers. Shout out to our guy, Stefan.
Yeah.
The only Oilers fan I know.
My man Lee P.
Oh, yeah. I know him too. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Anyway, crazy. You would have thought like the Gretzky Messier Oilers did that, no?
You would think.
Or a Canadians team.
They just
or,
keep
know,
winning.
With
they
Patrick Waugh in between the pipes.
Yeah, right. So that's the Canadian record.
What's the
American record?
I don't have that in front of me.
Okay, that's fine.
I guess they beat the 67-68 Montreal Canadiens, who won 12 in a row. So the Oilers won 13 straight. They dropped your Flames. Oh, Battle of Alberta.
Oh, yeah, baby.
3-1.
I should have been wearing my jersey today.
You know, we need to get a hockey drop, like a music bed, like we do with the Rounders.
There it is, baby.
Holy shit, JD.
Yo.
We can't get anything by you today, JD. We got breaking trades. We got a little hockey tack.
Yeah.
And the young boys.
Oh, I need that drop.
Yeah. How did it go? If the young boys
can't take a little bit of
heckling. Yeah, if the young boys can't take a little bit of heckling, they should stick to Tiddlywinks and PlayStation.
There you go.
There's a second part to that, too.
Yeah.
What does he say?
Second part of that feature that was filmed on that
so good.
On that news channel, yeah.
But he does a similar cadence.
We definitely say that a lot. If the young boys.
Just that part.
Just that part. Yeah. But Tiddlywinks in PlayStation is an underrated part of that, too.
So good.
All right, final one from is this news here. New in the NBA this year, players must play at least 65 games if they're going to win an award. The NBA wants less sitting of games, and there are TV deals to sell. So just play those games, fellas, all right? The reigning MVP, Joel Embiid, is on pace to play 62 games. So it's unlikely. Yeah, it's possible that he could win the award, but it is unlikely. This from Sixers Wire. 76ers head coach Nick Nurse says, quote, 65-game rule isn't fair. Is this news?
This is fake news.
What do you mean?
I don't think this is what he said.
Well, he said it.
No.
This is the definition of fake news. I made this post because, or this topic here, because he said it.
Well, look, I went to Hoops Hype and I saw a headline that said something similar.
Nick
Nurse on 65-game threshold for Joel Embiid. I don't think it's fair.
He said that.
I did a little, no, he did not. I did a little deep dive. He was asked about, hypothetically, about Embiid not hitting, maybe, the 65-game mark. And I thought he was saying it's not fair to being asked about it in advance because it hasn't happened yet.
You're right.
So he said, quote, Nick Nurse, he wants to see how things play out. He said, quote, again, I don't think fair. It's the first year of us doing this. I think we just got to kind of have to, before we speculate on what it looks like, we got to get there. We got to see where we're at, what happens, and what decisions are made. See if he's played, you know? So I think I took this as he was actually saying, it's not fair to look into the future. We don't know the future. Joel Embiid could play enough games.
Yeah.
He's missed 10. He can't miss more than 7. There's 40 games left. So I think this is fake news, Taskmelis.
They're putting a tack under Nick Nurse's ass and asking him.
Nick Nurse didn't say 65-game rule isn't fair. He didn't say that.
Well, you missed the first quote. You missed the first part of that same quote. Just the first part of that same quote, because he was asked about it. Hey, yeah, Embiid's not going to play 65 games. What happens? What are you going to do? Are you going to play 65 games? He did say, the only time I ever give it any thought is when you ask me about it. Right. So he was angry. Then he said, again, I don't think fair. Again, I don't think fair.
See, I don't think fair. Is the fair part to the threshold the NBA has put on it, or is the not fair or whatever fair to being asked about it? Because it hasn't happened yet. He might get there, guys.
Yeah, maybe.
Which is actually my takeaway from this. It's like, we are making a big deal out of something that we don't even know to be true yet, right? I mean, look, I'm just as guilty. We've brought it up. Like, I actually think, oh my God, the NBA scriptwriters will have Joel Embiid play 64 games, and then all hell is going to break loose when he's averaging 36 points per game and whatever, double-digit rebounds and 5 assists, and his team's undefeated or, you know, has an incredible record when he plays, but he didn't hit the 65. Like, that's, I can almost see it happening now.
Sure.
But it hasn't happened.
And when the NBA signs its TV deal that's upcoming very, very, very soon, the negotiations begin very soon, they can say, all right, let's get rid of that rule that we had last season.
Yeah, that we just put in place to try and get guys to play.
Try and get guys to play the national TV games especially, but more in general, which they have been. Joel Embiid did miss 10 games in the first half of the season, so he is on pace to miss it. You have to miss 18 to not win this award because of this new rule.
He cannot miss more than 7. He can miss 7 and still be
the rest of the way here, yes. Yeah. But max 17 for the season, so 10 plus 7. He can't miss 8. But yeah, it's all how you interpret Mr. Nurse's comments.
Yeah, that's how I took it.
But just basically what this comes down to is let the voters vote. And that's what it comes down to.
The boy vote.
Yeah. Let the boy vote. If a guy plays 61 games, is he MVP or not? If he plays 62 games or 63 games or 64 games, does that eliminate them from the MVP? I understand the whole load management angle of the NBA trying to get away from all of that because it has been too much of a story the last few years. Yeah. It has been. But Kawhi has said this year, no more managing the load. It's all load Leonard from here on in.
Right.
And it's changed. He plays. But Embiid, I don't think he's going to get to 65 because we've seen him in the postseason. He wears down a little bit throughout all these months. There's no doubt. It wears on him. He's missed postseason games because of injury, not because he's sitting, in 5 of his 6 postseasons.
Right.
So he's got to come in as fresh as possible.
Okay, but then that's their that's an Embiid decision. Yeah. That's a Sixers decision to literally, with the rules in place, it's not like we didn't know the rules heading into the season, the threshold. If you want to win MVP, you got to play 65. I'm sorry, that's what we decided on. That's what the Players Association has also decided on. Okay, so if you don't really want to, because, like, I'm talking about want to as in there's a game or two at the end of the season and they make a decision. You know what? We'd rather you sit because you haven't done shit in the playoffs, man. Like, we got to actually win some playoff series here. Let's not worry about a second MVP. But they'll come to that bridge and we'll find out what they do.
Yeah. And also, I think Nick Nurse is probably listening to the doctors. Not the Nick Nurses and doctors, but some of them. He has to hear what they have to say about Joel Embiid because Greg Popovich is listening to it for Victor Wembanyama. And it is a whole reversal of what Adam Silver said about managing the load. He said the reports are that it helps players, and it does. But this year, all of a sudden, Adam Silver has said, check these reports. It doesn't help them. Yes, it's all about reports. And speaking of Canada, since we talked hockey and all that, this is extremely important. I just got a text that asked, is fried mushroom poutine a thing?
Oh, my God.
Because poutine is a thing.
Who the hell is asking you that?
Fried mushrooms in a poutine? They put everything in a poutine
it's
in
a
Canada.
Thing, of course, yeah.
Fried mushroom?
Yeah, of course.
Just grill it, baby. You don't got to fry it. Oh. Anyway, whatever. Mushrooms are good.
Who is
and a poutine.
Yeah, who is
honestly, I'm not going
to
reveal.
No,
I'm not going
to
reveal.
Know,
I'm not going
to
reveal.
Is it a Canadian?
No. No. It sounds like an American to me, doesn't it?
It really does.
It sounds like Brian Leach to me.
nobody knows that.
Well, I was going to say, final thought. That has nothing to do with anything.
Yep.
But when you brought up nurse, you made it a little nurse doctor joke.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It wasn't a great joke.
It made me think, though. Do you think Doc Rivers is on a plane, right? Okay, hypothetical. And someone starts to have like heart palpitations and is like not doing well and maybe keels over and somebody yells, is there a doctor on the plane?
Uh-huh.
Mm. Or maybe they have to yell, is there a doc on the plane?
Yeah.
Keep it informal. Does he have to say yes?
Does he have to say yes?
I am. But I mean, same goes for Dr. Julius Erving, I guess, too.
Dr. J.
Dr. J, yeah. Do you have to say yes, but I'm not that type of doctor?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, do you think he sort of sheepishly looks around? Like, Dr. J, like, especially? Like, I mean, they know I'm a doctor.
They know
I'm
a doctor, yeah.
But not that kind of doctor.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Doc Rivers probably knows CPR.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he's played in sports?
Because his name's Doc.
I don't know. His dad was a cop. You know, safety conscious. I don't know.
His dad was a cop?
Yeah. Was he?
Cop Rivers?
There's Cop Rivers. There's Doc Rivers.
Wow.
I could be wrong about that.
They're all named after
interesting.
Their profession. Yeah. There's Teacher Rivers.
Yeah.
Is Glenn on the airplane? Is there a Glenn here?
Is there a Glenn on the airplane?
Is there a baby here? A big baby.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very little cause for a baby on an airplane. Like, you know, to announce.
Right. No, that's
allowed. Unless you're looking for your own.
Yeah. You'd be more specific, I think.
Yeah.
He's big. He's a big baby. Have you seen him?
Big baby Davis. All grown up. Flying the airplane.
Right.
Landing us on the Hudson River.
How could big baby Davis land a plane? Probably.
Holy shit. We were bouncing all around here.
He took instruction extremely well when we worked with him that one day.
Oh, because this goes back to the when you poll men, could they, in an emergency, fly a plane as long as they were talking to air traffic control?
Yeah.
Big baby Davis could. Yeah. You're right. He took your direction phenomenally well. Yeah,
extremely.
He was so good.
Dude, dancing the music that wasn't playing.
That's right.
No, he danced to quiet.
Yeah.
He danced to silence. Yeah, we were booging. I'm glad you pulled out the big baby Davis, because when I mentioned Big Baby Davis, it did sound smart. Like, let's talk about babies on an airplane. But I had a brain fart. I thought for a second he was Doc's son. He was Austin Rivers. That's why his dad was a cop.
Why did you think his dad's a cop?
I don't know. I feel like I read it once sometime.
Wow. Is anybody fact-checking us here in the stream team?
Actually, the
Doc Rivers' father. Let me look it up.
Yeah. The Atlanta Hawks just did a social video where they asked each of their players, who would you trust amongst your teammates to fly the plane?
That's holy shit.
Nobody knew, though.
This guy called it.
He's a cop, right?
How the hell did you know
Rivers
that?
Dad?
I knew it. I have no idea. I read it.
As son of a police officer, Doc Rivers, and then that's what the headline is. And
there you go.
His father was a big inspiration. There
hell
you go.
Yeah.
What a call. Grady Rivers. That's his name.
I got to get something off my chest. Nothing drives me crazier than sending a message to a group chat and getting no response. That's why I'm a big emoji responder. Love a hang loose hand or a salute, but man, it hurts when you send a message and get nothing back. Ouch! We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/NoDunks today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/NoDunks. This episode of No Dunks is brought to you by BetterHelp.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's get to Tweet of the Night. Holy crap.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
This Tweet of the Night involves another controversy that happened yesterday in the association. This is from our man, Jay King, at The Athletic. He tweeted because he was watching the Mavs-Celtics game that, quote, Tim Hardaway Jr. was furious at the Mavericks Jumbotron operators for showing a replay of the Jaylen Brown crossover on Luka Doncic. Jaylen Brown, a beautiful crossover, and Luka tripped?
Well, he dropped.
He fell.
Come on, there's no trip.
No, did he trip over himself?
Oh, sure, but that counts. He didn't trip on Jaylen Brown's foot.
So
I don't think he did.
So the tweet is basically about Tim Hardaway, Luka's teammate, basically saying, what the hell are you putting that up for?
Do you anger. Do you show an embarrassing clip
against
the home team?
You don't show embarrassing stuff about our team.
But that is,
in this social media era, that is literally as bad as it gets in terms of videos, that gets put on social media, that they showed it, etc. So you just don't do it in our building.
Tim Hardaway's pissed about.
I guess he's saying.
I can't disagree with that.
I can't disagree either.
And you don't see it often. Like if we go down to the Fortress and Capella gets dunked on by Zion Williamson, they're not racking it up.
No, they do not.
And generally showing it again. I mean, you don't do that. Like, you're sort of clowning your own team.
You don't do that.
I'm trying, like, was there any reason they put it up there again? Because they thought, which tends to happen with a lot of these highlights when a guy falls, it's like you watch it again and you go, Jaylen Brown stepped on his foot. That's why he went over.
Yes, they could have.
Could they have thought that happened? And like, and then they watch it and then they play it. And like, he actually just tripped on his own feet. Like, he got shook.
You could definitely think that they aired it because they had a reason behind it. To show everybody in the building. There was a reason he fell down.
Yeah.
But Jaylen Brown, and he just dropped Luka with a beautiful, beautiful crossover.
Luka had a funny comment after the game, too. He was like, hell of a play. I was hoping he missed the jump shot because he's down on the ground.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing I can do from down here. But if he misses the jump shot, sure, somebody clips it. It goes around Twitter, but no one cares.
Yeah.
Every comment's like, finish the play. Doesn't count. Didn't hit the jumper. But you score. It counts, you know?
Yeah.
It's a killer highlight.
Whoever showed that on the Jumbotron, I guess, is a Celtics fan. Because you don't do that in your own building. You don't.
Infiltrated.
And the whole, hey, he fell on Jaylen Brown's feet. He got tripped on Jaylen Brown's feet. There ain't much to that because he didn't.
No, he didn't.
So it's a weird thing to actually bring it up and show it again. Coming from Toronto, where we were moving down here to Atlanta, I go to basketball games and I want to see the opposing team's replays and stuff. They don't show them.
You're right.
In general, they do not show them. If the Raptors are here and Kyle Lowry, let's say, drop somebody, they'll never show that replay.
And you want to see it sometimes. You're like, I want to see that.
As an opposing fan.
Get your phone out and jump on Twitter.
As an opposing fan, you want to see that, but it makes sense that the home team wouldn't want to show you that. And it doesn't happen in Atlanta. They will not show you that stuff. So I can understand it.
I think most arenas have it's a pretty hard rule, I think, that you're not showing highlights where the guy gets dunked on, dropped from the other team.
Which kind of sucks because you want to watch the game. You'd like to see a cool replay.
Some players can take it, some can't. Luka, I don't think, had really any real issue with it.
No.
Tim Hardaway's, going to bat for his guy. But some other players, I'm sure they, thin-skinned guys, are like, They would be offended. They'd ask for a trade. Get me out of here.
Let's ask Thin-Skin Wade. Not Thin-Skin. Skin Wade, who is a broadcaster on the Mavericks broadcast. I didn't hear him talk about it. Let's hear Jeff. Jeff Skin Wade. His name is not Thin-Skin. I'm not calling him Thin-Skin, but his name is Jeff Skin Wade.
You know, it's ironic about Tim Hardaway going to bat for his guy is that that tweet that you showed had 2 million views.
That's right.
So it's, you know, I mean, Jay tweeted it, Jay King of The Athletic, but I assume more people found out about the play and went and seeked out the play because of what he said. There's got to be people that saw the tweet going, well, what happened?
That's a good call.
Let me see. Ooh, got him bat. Anyway, that's the internet, man.
That's the internet, man.
That's 2024 for you.
That is absolutely correct.
Let's call it there. What a show. Woo, baby. Had a little bit of everything there. Crazy performances last night. A trade happening during the show. Some fun headlines, fun discussion. Great tweet of the night. Hopefully a classic. You tell us. 5-star rating and review. Hit the like button. Maybe subscribe. 5 games on tonight. Some decent ones. Nuggets Pacers. Knicks Nets. Jazz Pels. Blazers Thunder. Lakers Clippers. Dare I say, is it rivalry week? In the NBA?
It is.
Yeah, we got a few rivalries there, Tass.
Yeah.
Knicks, Nets, Lakers, Clippers, at least. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow to break it all down. TK will be here with us in the Classic Factory as long as he can get back on his flight. Might be having some snow issues up there in Illinois, but we'll see. Thanks for joining us. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, I'm doing my Terry Rozier info up, info looking right now. I sometimes forget this, but this man was a Boston Celtic for 4 years. He's an established player in this league, 9 seasons, and he loves a spaghetti sandwich that we ate with him once. Maybe he doesn't now, but we did.
Oh, you don't think he eats them anymore?
Nah.
Spaghetti with
ranch?
He's
grown up.
Yeah. Probably has a personal chef. You imagine that's what he's asking a personal chef to make? Would you be offended if you were a personal chef?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I can cook you anything, and you want white bread, spaghetti, and ranch, and sugar?
Yeah.
Really?
Gross.
You know what you pay me to do this? Just do it yourself. Embrace the day, people.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.